Now back to The Goods with Dahlia Kurtz on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Happy Sunday to you. Happy, like I'll keep saying, because even though we're paying tribute to International Holocaust Remembrance Day, I'm happy because I'm able to be here because my family survived the Holocaust. And this show is dedicated to my bubby Rose. And still ahead, we will be joined by a filmmaker who's racing against time to film Canada's remaining World War II vets and their Holocaust stories. We're going to be joined by a Holocaust survivor who reunited with his rescuers. And my next guest is also a survivor. And his photographic memory helped him paint a clear picture of his life growing up in pre-war Poland, as well as his life confined in the Warsaw Ghetto and the death camp as a young child. He survived that. He survived 6 Nazi concentration camps. And he is here now to share his story, Pinchas Guter. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello.
Hi, Pinchas.
I'm here.
And I thank you for it. You were telling me when we spoke that before the war, your life was uneventful, your father, a quiet winemaker, and then everything changes. What was that day when everything changed?
Well, when everything changed was the first time I came into the ugly face of the Gestapo. My grandfather was a notable in Łódź, and they had lists going around arresting people. My grandfather was 78 years old. We had adjoining two apartments, small apartments with an interleading door, because my parents looked after my grandparents. And suddenly there was a ring at the door of my grandfather, and my father went. The war was still raging. He opened the door, and there were 2 Gestapo men in their black coats asking for my grandfather. My grandfather was lying in bed. He had had an operation just before the war started, and he was recovering slowly. He was 78 years old. They came in, these 2 Gestapo men, and they asked my father, show them, what's wrong with him, and they said, well, he just had an operation, he's 78 years old, he's very weak and everything. And they decided that it wasn't worthwhile taking him, and one of them, you know, I spoke Yiddish, so I understood German, and one of them, I still remember the word, I'll never forget it, and the one said to the other one, "Der soll schon krepieren," you know, he's going to, you know, disappear anyway. Krepieren means he's going to die. And and they left, but they didn't leave without asking my father, "Who are you?" He said, I am the son. What do you do? I'm a winemaker. They took him away, took him down to the cellars. We were making wine, and they beat him so badly, they threw him down like for dead, and they got the German military police. The war was still raging, to come and take everything out of those cellars. There were about 11,000 bottles of different wine and liqueurs and others, and vats maturing. They broke everything. Something, I've got documents that this place existed for nearly 100 years in the family, and they destroyed it within 24 to 48 hours. So this was my first darkness that started, you know, that kind of came, you know, like the clouds covered, you know, Eastern Europe when the Nazis attacked Poland, and this was my first encounter with them.
You speak so candidly about the emotional struggles and, you know, what you're going through, and you're remembering these stories with such detail, right down to the color of their coat. When you share this over and over again, as you keep the stories alive, how does it affect your pain?
How did it affect my what?
How does it affect your pain right now, your emotions? How does this affect you sharing this story?
Well, you know, it's difficult to explain, but basically what happens is that having a pictorial memory, these pictures kind of fleet in front of my mind. I can see myself, this little boy of 8, standing next to the bed and listening to these Nazis, you know, asking my father questions and not knowing what is going to happen. They're taking him away. And of course, they beat him so badly he was unconscious for a week afterwards. Fortunately, they didn't kill him at the time. And, you know, and in a way, it reminds me of my pre-war, of the happy times that was there before, because I kind of, everything stopped at that particular moment, and I kind of try and go backwards, because, you know, the pain of what's happened later on is so difficult to cope with, but it has to be, because it is my duty to tell the world exactly what happened, how it happened, and, you know, especially with the denial of the Holocaust at the moment going around worldwide, with the rise of the ugly head of anti-Semitism, it is my duty to tell it. But at the same time, you know, it also brings me back to remember the good times, my family, my grandfather, my grandmother, all my cousins, and we were a family of always 150. So it's kind of cathartic in one way, because it kind of expunges you suffer, but it does kind of, you share it with other people, and I think sharing it with other people and giving them hope that things can improve, I think is cathartic. So I've forgotten the expression in English, but basically it's kind of like it's bad and it's good. On the one hand, it's terrifying. On the other hand, I think it's important to be able to share it and so forth.
Pinchas Guter is with us right now, sharing his story of survival, and it's incredible because the Nazis tried to take your religion from you, and it's what kept you alive. They tried to take your voice, your life from you, and now you're using it to educate the world and try to make it better.
Yes, I think that is, you know, the fact that, you know, I survived Hitler. You know, I had my bar mitzvah in a concentration camp in Częstochowa in Poland. And the rabbi who knew my father, they all went to the same yeshiva when they were youngsters. And I found him there when I was taken to this terrible place where we had to, you know, work very hard and get little, very, very little food and being very badly treated and you know, being under a sentence of death or every minute any Nazi that wanted to could kill you at the same time. But we resisted. Resistance is not just taking arms and trying to shoot somebody else. Resistance is moral, spiritual, social. And I had bar mitzvah in the midnight, and then the rabbi blessed me, and he said to me, with God's help, you will survive Hitler. He said it in Yiddish, mit den reibischen Helf, es die beleben Hitler. And thank God I outlived Hitler, and I have a family, and Judaism is continuing, and I'm a religious person, and I continue our tradition, and we continue. We're not going to give in. So, you know, from that point of view, it is terribly important to realize the resilience of human being, especially of Judaism and our feelings, emotions, and our spirit is alive.
Pinchas, you were talking about your father and how he was so brutally beaten. He was unconscious for a week, and you said, fortunately, they did not kill him at the time. But then when you were 10, you witnessed something that, especially for somebody, I mean, it's bad enough you're 10, but you've got a photographic memory, so you remember how you lost your father.
Yes, we were in you know, my father, who was a very timid individual and very hardworking winemaker, he... you know, during the war, he became like a hero. He became both a hero, and he didn't trust the Germans at all, didn't trust the Nazis. So he kept us hidden all through the Warsaw Ghetto, all through the deportations, and we were never ever exposed to be taken to Treblinka to be murdered. And he became like a giant, but also at the same time like an angel with wings. That's how I see him. He kind of encompassed us, and my I had a twin sister, so my mother, my sister, and I, and my father, we were always hidden somewhere. He didn't trust them. And he became a real hero, and to the last moment. But eventually, we were discovered in a bunker after the uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto in April of 1943. On the 19th of April, Erev Pesach. And I just want to share with you something: the spiritual resistance of the Jewish emotions and feeling and culture. It was Erev Pesach. And we went down to the bunker, but my father obviously was a winemaker. He must have had a few bottles of wine because that's what he was doing in the Warsaw Ghetto. He was making wine on the black market and trying to sell it to keep body and soul together to feed us. And he took some bottles of wine, and there must have been a baker who baked some matzahs. And in that bunker, while they were being shooting and burning upstairs, we celebrated Passover. We celebrated the Seder. We celebrated. We cried, and we were waiting for deliverance. We were begging God for deliverance, but at the same time, we celebrated the deliverance from Egypt, and we were hoping for deliverance. And then they caught us, and they shipped us to Majdanek. And when we arrived in Majdanek, my father said to me, "You must say you're 5 years older." So from somebody who was then 11 years old, I suddenly became 16. And he took me with the men, because they divided men from women and children and everything else. And so I went with the men. And then when we went into the ante room of the guest chamber, which I didn't know at the time that that's what it was. I knew that we were going to die, but I didn't know that that was the ante room when they made us undress. My father kind of kept me next to him, and he started running, and then there was a little man with a white coat with a little stick, and he pushed people right, left, right, left, right, left, and I came into a room, and I saw shower heads, and I said my prayers, because we knew in the Warsaw Ghetto, gas is coming out, and you're going to die. But in my case, water came out. So my father saved my life, because he told me to say I am 5 years older. I still have now from Buchenwald, I got the documents from my incarceration in the concentration camps. I was in six concentration camps in a death march, and it shows that I was born in 1927 instead of 1932. So my father guarded me right through, and I still regard to this day, I regard him as a kind of angel with wings. That this is the way I picture my father, this hero, this giant.
Pinchas
Guter. I lost my whole family in Majdanek, because unfortunately they were murdered the day we arrived in Majdanek, my twin sister, my mother, and my father.
Pinchas Guter is sharing such a story, to have the strength to share it, to have the strength to survive the Holocaust, 10 years old, and you're now alone. You've lost your family. What is life like for a little boy who has just seen horrors that no one can imagine? How do you get through?
Well, in the beginning, of course, as I came out of the showers and I saw that gas didn't come out, I believed that my father was alive. So I didn't realize that the guest chamber was just next door, and that we're pushing people right, left, people going to the left were going to the guest chamber. So I started looking for my father, because I believed he survived. And I ran around all over the place looking for him, and I couldn't find him, and I found a man who I knew in Warsaw. So I went up to him, and I said to him, "Did you see my father? Where is my father?" And I started kind of, pushing him, and he wouldn't answer. And eventually he lifted his eyes to heaven, and I knew that my father was murdered. And of course, afterwards I learned that they were all murdered. My father, my mother, my sister were murdered the day we arrived. And then something happens. You become invisible. you have to, because you know you are in an apocalyptic hell that every second you can be either taken to the gas chamber or murdered or beaten to death. You know, there were lots of the main of the guards in Majdanek. They were horrible, were Ukrainians, collaborators with the Nazis, and they were worse than the Nazis themselves. And they would beat you with spades. They didn't, it wasn't enough for them that they would send people to the gas chambers and its elections on a daily basis, but they also beat you. They got special pleasure. So what you had to make yourself is make yourself invisible. So suddenly you became like somebody in a cocoon. Except, you know, you were hoping that eventually you would come out as a butterfly, but of course you didn't have those hopes. You put blinkers on your eyes and you tried to make yourself invisible. And for the next, you know, from May of 1943 until the liberation in 1945, I was like in a cocoon. I always used to hide myself. I always used to make myself invisible so that I shouldn't be in the eyes of any of these horrible individuals who were either torturing you or killing you or selecting you for the gas chambers or for death pits, because in other concentration camps, I was in a working camp called Skarżysko Kamienne, and a man who survived the war was a writer, Mordechai Strigler. He wrote a book in Yiddish in 1948, which was published in the Argentine, and he called it In the Factories of Death, in the Fabriken von Tod, because that's where they worked you to death. They didn't. So you made yourself invisible, and because your whole education was this was the education, death was the enemy. So you had to all the time make yourself completely, you know, as if you didn't exist, and your emotions were stilted, your feelings were stilted. You existed in that moment. Neither the past nor the future, nothing existed at that time. You were in a kind of cauchemar, in suspended time, and you didn't know. You were in a situation which has never been, and hopefully will never happen again.
So when you're going through this and you're making yourself invisible and you're trying to suspend yourself in time, are you even thinking, will this ever end? Or you're just stuck in that moment, just trying to make it through that one moment?
Yeah, the suspended animation, in a way, that cloud lifted a little bit when I found the rabbi who went to yeshiva together with my father, and he gave me some hope, because you know I was always a very religious boy, and faith kept me. I didn't keep the faith; faith kept me. And when he said to me, "Es überleben Hitler," you will outlive Hitler. Somehow or other, I gained this kind of feelings of maybe there is something in the future. And because he spoke to me in Yiddish, because I put on tefillin, because I had my bar mitzvah, I started having some kind of hope. So that was at the end of 1944. And then, of course, I was shipped to Buchenwald. And from Buchenwald, I was shipped to a place called Kolditz, which was in Germany near Leipzig. And then we were on a death march. And all through, I had much more hope from that time onwards. And somehow or other, this heavy cloud had lifted because of having had a bar mitzvah, having become a proper Jew, because this is when you take on responsibilities. And somehow or other, you know, a butterfly tried to come out of that cocoon, and the suspended animation started lifting.
Do you remember, Pinchas, the day that you were liberated?
I remember it extremely well. It was, some people say it was the 10th of May, but I remember it was the 8th of May. I was after a death march to Theresienstadt from Kolditz. We walked for nearly between 2.5 to 3 weeks, 1,500 of us left the camp in Germany, and we only arrived, half of us were killed or died on the way. And we arrived about 2 weeks before the end of the war in Theresienstadt. And suddenly, on the day of liberation, I was woken up. We were living, in these bunks and things, and somebody said, they all disappeared and the gates are open. And I was pretty still well, because God looked after me. And when we arrived in Colditz, a Nazi, told me, he told youngsters to step out. Nobody stepped out, and I stepped out. And this was obviously providential, because he took me to the kitchen where the SS worked, so I could eat my fill. And I weighed 40 kilos when I arrived from Buchenwald, but then I kind of built myself in the 3-4 months I was in Colditz. I built myself up. And so what actually happened was that I had the strength to survive the death march, and then also to be able to run out. And I ran out, and I saw these Nazis, Germans, elderly men with children's with children and women and pregnant women, and the Russians were walking with their tanks and the infantry, and they were chasing out the Germans that were resettled by Hitler, during the time when he was doing ethnic cleansing, and he chased out Czechs, and he brought in ethnic Germans to live in Moravia and in Bohemia. And so they were being now chased out by the Czechs and by everybody else who thinks against them. And, this little boy who was then 11 years, who was then 30, going on 13 years old, he felt sorry, because, when you suffered, so despite the fact that these Germans, who I suffered under for terrible places and in terrible places over 5 years, I felt sorry, because these were human beings. And to me, these were children, these were women, these were old men. And despite the fact that they were being beaten and all kinds of things were being happened to them. But when you see little children suffering, you can't help but feeling empathy, and I felt empathy. And there were some young men there, also Holocaust survivors from Theresienstadt, who ran out with the strength to come out and watch these scenes. And we spoke about it, and we felt empathy for these human beings, because when you suffer, you can't help and feel empathy for people that suffer. And this is the day of my liberation. It was empathy for humanity. And I always tell this, because it's so important to tell the world the most important thing is to feel that the other person is the same as you. He's a human being. You got to feel for him. He's equal. It doesn't matter whether he's black or whether he's Chinese or whether he looks different or he's got different religion. You must always remember that he's a human being with the same emotions, with the same feelings, and must just respect them, and you must actually feel that he is the same exactly as you. He might have a different religion, and this is terribly important. This is what I teach. I try and make the world a little bit by bit, just by drop, as a better place for humanity.
Pinchas Guter, thank you so much for making the world a better place, for taking that faith, thank you to your father. May his memory be a blessing. May your family's memory be a blessing. It's a beautiful thing that you are doing out of a horrific tragedy. Thank you so much for sharing your story, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I hope that everybody is going to be safe, that the pandemic is going to finish, and the world is slowly, slowly, I know it takes a long time, but slowly it is getting a better place. People today are caring more than they have done before. You look what happened in Canada. We brought in Syrian refugees by the tens of thousands when they were suffering. If that had happened before the war in the 30s, when Jews were suffering in Europe and Eastern Europe, and they would have been allowed to go in other countries, maybe a lot of them would have been saved from this terrible Shoah. So thank you very much for having me.
Pinchas Guter, Holocaust survivor. More Holocaust survivor stories to come. This is The Goods. I'm Dahlia on 580 CFRA.